So, Patrick, I know you kind of initially had your call with Max, and this was your idea for the call. So why don't you maybe start with a quick little intro on, you know, what that call meant to you that you and Max had back in the day. And then me and you can kind of joint interview Max and try to pull all the juicy, you know, answers and gossip out of them. Sound good?
All right. That sounds good.
And this is the Leverage Podcast. You guys are listening to episode somewhere in the 40s or 50s. Not really sure. If I seem a little out of it today, it's because I'm hopped up on a shitload of Norco. I took a slap shot hockey puck to the foot yesterday and ended up in the emergency room last night. So that was a lot of fun. And Jesus.
Jesus. All right.
So I'm I'm functioning. I'm no longer in insane pain anymore, but I'm definitely on some opiates, as they say. So, you know, I'll try not to sound like a heroin child on this call.
Oh, that's all right. You know, life is good. You know, gotta get your drugs.
Gotta do it. All right. So Patrick, first of all, welcome Max to the call. Just to give a little introduction, Max was one of our longtime mods in the Leverage group. Guy's a total beast. Runs a huge, what is it called? Technically, it's a hedge fund, right?
Wealth management firm, yeah.
Wealth management firm up in Boston. Fuck, how long have we known each other, Max? Like 5 years?
I would say 5 years, yeah. I met you like my last year in New York and the beginning of 2012.
And the night we met, I think it was pretty funny because we were out with Joel and I appeared to be cock blocking. Which is unusual for me. I didn't think I was actually cock blocking. But
I think I remember that it came. I don't remember the specifics around it, but I do remember Joel was like, yeah, my buddy, like Robbie's like really good with women. And he didn't really give any context to it. So I think I was just on a high alert.
I thought that chick was your girlfriend. To make a long story short, Max came out, Joel came out, Max was with a girl. I kind of assumed they were dating. But whenever we got to talking and he was kind of talking to Joel, and you know, I didn't know they were like on a date. And I had a girlfriend at the time anyway, so I wasn't trying to swoop in or anything like that. But I think Max got the idea that maybe I was trying to like game his girl.
At that point, the extent of what I knew about this whole world was, you know, I read The Game in college and I was just like, I don't know. Joel was like, yeah, this guy's a beast. And that's his like full-time job. And I'm like, why is he here?
I can definitely see how that would happen.
No, it's great. It's great. But yeah, a little after, like within 1 year of meeting you, I had gone through a big transition with work, kind of hit a slow growth period. So I was at Bloomberg 3 years. And by the third year, kind of the J curve rise, you know, you get right into your training program, and then depending on how you do in there and how you do with your next job and your next project, and you can move up very quickly until you hit middle kind of management where your boss has already been there for 12 years or 20 years at that point. So it was very apparent to me that if I was ever going to, I could continue doing what I was doing and get like modest raises and be fine and live a good life in New York, and even if I went to another job, everything I was interviewing with was very lateral. Nothing was going up. So I just had a big feeling that I had to take like a giant step back or a giant step in a different direction if I was going to get any forward momentum. And I was kind of addicted to that momentum. I kind of, you know, I was 25 at the time. I'm 27 now. So it's not like that long ago, but 24, 25 at the time. And everything had been so successful so far, and I didn't want to lose any momentum. So my roommate gave me a copy of that Tim Ferriss 4-Hour Workweek, and it was also the same time I had met Joel and Jesse and Robbie, who were all kind of, you know, work for themselves. And I was like, you know, what is going on here? Like, this is clearly a world outside here that I've, you know, seen in person. It's not just in a book. And I got like 3 chapters in, and I had that feeling where like I was up till 3 in the morning, and I knew I couldn't just sit in that job. I had to make like a drastic move. I had to quit and do something completely different to like get into the world that Robbie and Joel and Jesse live in, which is self-run, you know, your own boss, entrepreneurial, make your own income based on your creativity and how hard you work and what you're able to put together. And yeah, it was totally the right move.
That's cool. I didn't know that we kind of partially inspired this trip that you took. I was just, you know, cause I hadn't known you very long, and I just knew that you were a beast, obviously. And, you know, I'd heard from both, obviously, when I met you, I think I met you before I left for Europe that summer, right?
Yeah, you had. Cause you guys are all, you all were like pretty mysterious, because everyone that I knew was jockeying for the same stuff. They were all like, what kind of 9-to-5 job do you have? What box do you fit in? What, you know? And then you guys like pop in and out of nowhere. Like Jesse shows up wearing like a t-shirt in New York, and I'm like, why are you wearing, like, I thought you were like a beast. Like, why are you wearing a t-shirt? Like, everyone I know who's a beast like wears a suit and like has a title. You know, what is that? Like, how is that possible? You know? That definitely struck me. I mean, that definitely was something new. And I met Joel randomly. I met him at Lalo. If you ever met Big Lou, this guy is like total, he just inherited all his money. He does not work. You could get a beer with him at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday, anytime you wanted to. And like, so they were all out to beers at Lavo, and I just joined them. And then that kind of opened the whole door.
Yeah, that's right. And then I met you at Central Park with fake service dog. And then I basically left for Europe. And then when I came back, Jesse was like, dude, me and Max have been fucking destroying New York. Where are you? We were going out every night and slaying every girl in the city. And I was on lockdown with my girlfriend at the time, which is creating a lot of FOMO. But then, So when did you leave for your trip? What, it was like
I have a structure for this call that kind of focuses around the trip, and it's got 4 stages, which is, first stage is leaving, preparing to leave. The second stage is the execution, how I put everything together, because it was very deliberate. And all of these moves here, while it might seem like something that was just spur of the moment, like maybe something that was a little reckless, it was all actually very carefully planned. The third is reentry, and the fourth is basically what I'm up to now and how that all ties in. So just to jump in on the first one, getting ready to leave, I think it's very important to get all the perspectives from your network. So your network is huge. And right now, any of the guys listening to the call, your leverage network is like massive. Well, the number of people you can reach out to and just ask questions and bounce ideas off of, you really can get the data points. If you're trying to think through everything in your head, you're going to miss a million different things. Like, I love it whenever Jesse like calls me to like hash something out, or Joel calls me to hash something out, because it's like, they're doing the same thing. They're just trying to figure out what they're missing. So I was like, look, I want to leave, and I want to travel, and I want to cut the net from out from under me. Cause everything at that point had been structured. You know, I went to like a private high school, like I went to a private college, got an internship that turned into a job, and like everywhere along the way, like I was basically kind of on this path to be successful, you know, and I executed. It's not like it was easy, but it was definitely like, I was coddled, you know, in that sense. And I wanted to like, I guess it was like a rite of passage thing. I wanted to go out into the world without any support or any help. So I asked him, I was like, you know, I want to cut all ties, and I just want to go out, travel, and do whatever I want. And, you know, I can make it work. I have the money that I've saved up. It's cheap everywhere else besides New York City, so that's not a big deal. So I talked to everyone that I could, just spelled out my idea. And within 3 weeks, I had quit my job. I had, used up every single one of my vacation days. That was important, because at Bloomer, you were paid for every vacation day. So if you didn't use them and you quit, you're basically throwing like an extra $5,000 out the window. So everything was very structured on that count. And then the cool thing about leaving the country is it's the one real chance to be a foreigner. Like, everywhere in the United States, you, like, you at least somewhat look like someone. You live, you know, in between San Francisco, LA, like Miami and Boston and New York. It's all basically the same thing. But when you go and you're hanging out in, like, you know, Denmark, or you're hanging out in Australia, like, you are the foreigner. And it's a very interesting experience that can't really be, like, described. You have to be, you have to experience it. So that was very important to me. So I quit and I just flew out to New Zealand, and I started there because it was the last place in the world. You know, I couldn't go backwards. That's like, if you start in Australia, you could always go back to New Zealand, but it's like basically the last place on earth. And I just started hopping from there on for 6 months.
I think you're going to get into this like in a second here, but, want to talk about like the budgeting and basically all the planning that went into it.
Sure. So finance background, this seemed very obvious to me, but, now looking back at it, it was actually very well structured. So I took out those 0% APR credit cards for 18 months. That's the deal that they were having at the time. They still have that deal. I took out three of them and I got a $30,000 credit line. I basically just used those,
For the W's on the line, I mean, you can basically run, you know, $18,000 worth of credit card charge and pay zero interest for 18 months.
So it's literally a free loan, which doesn't exist anywhere in the world except for on these credit cards. No bank, no country, like the risk-free rate, the United States borrows money at, you know, for the 10-year 1.8%. This is literally 0%. So they're banking on the fact that you're going to fuck it up, basically. So, which if you know what you're doing, then it's free. So, I took out the three cards. I got $30,000 in credit, and I actually ended up only spending 10,000 of those, including plane flights, over 6 months. And I do that because, like, you know, I started out in some expensive places. So Australia and New Zealand were expensive, but by the time I got into Bali, it was really like $10-$15 a day. I mean, it's just like, you're talking about experience here, and the experience isn't expensive. Like, surfing was $2 a day for the surfboard and like $5 to $10 a night for the room. And, oh, by the way, if you're looking at it now, it's less than half the cost of what it was when I went. So the Indonesian, what is it, like rupiah is fallen in value by more than 50%, since 2012. So if you're thinking about doing this now and you got $10,000 laying around, like, just go for it. Financially, it's very, very, very easy to structure something like this for yourself. The other thing that people might be thinking about when taking a trip like this, cutting ties, is like, what does that do for your career? What does that do for your, like, image, your personal image? I say it does a lot. I mean, a lot more than what the surface may appear to be. So a lot of people are kind of hard, making fun of me at work. Basically, they're like, "Oh, Max, like, lost his mind. Like, I can't believe he had a nervous breakdown. He couldn't take it in New York." And really, I found out those people were jealous.
Oh yeah, so dumb. Haters are gonna hate.
Yeah, and even now, I have a lot more like haters now than I did during that trip. But I guess it's like one of the measurements that you know that you're doing things right is when a lot of people say what you're doing is dumb or like hate on it. And if you feel like you're executing it correctly and it's working, you know, the system is the solution. You just keep doing it.
Yep.
Max, what was your personal life like at the time? I know you mentioned you like broke up with your girlfriend.
Yeah. So this is funny. This girl I had been dating, we didn't really have much of a connection with her, which is, it's kind of hard in New York. I mean, we talked about this before, where a lot of the women are very stressed with, I don't know, just the competition. And I feel like a lot of women like are trying to be perpetually like 35 years old, where they want like expensive shoes and expensive bag, and they want to like party in the Hamptons and all that kind of stuff. And so this girl was, she always kind of kept me at arm's length. So I kind of treated her the same way. I was just like, "Hey, by the way, I quit my job and I'm leaving." I just went to coffee with her, and she was like, "Oh, okay. Like, okay. See you later." And it's like, I never really had much of a relationship when I lived in New York. You know, I just found like to contrast it, when I got to my first place in New Zealand, like, I met this beautiful girl, like, who's super friendly and super nice, and, like, I don't know, like, my game has always been just, like, have a conversation. It's not been very approachy. It hasn't had, like, these funny one-liners, other than maybe, like, just the situational comments, you know? So I'm guessing because of the group, you want to hear some of the international dating stories. So I probably should throw some of those in before I get too stuck in the structural side.
Well, before you go on to that, how much did you plan on budgeting, and how much money did you have, like, saved? Who would you recommend for someone to take a trip like this? Like, what sort of financial situation would that
so,
be in?
So my value was that I was so young. So I had no money saved up. I had money in my retirement accounts because I had funneled everything there. So if I really got in, like, a lot of trouble, I never gotten my parents to get money. It's just been, like, a long standing thing with me. Ever since I was young, I've had, like, side jobs or whatever that I can at least fund myself. My first job, I was 12 years old. It's just kind of a lifelong thing for me. I had $0 in the bank, and I had $30,000 in debt that I took out on the credit cards. And that's what I started out with. And I was planning to go for a full year. And I wasn't really worried about it because, look, I didn't have any college debt. That was the one rule that I struck with my parents. So I was at least debt free. And I was like, you know what? I can at least take on some debt when everyone else is, you know, paying for an MBA or paying for, oh, that was the other thing. $200,000 to get an MBA compared to what? And I was like, okay, life experience. What kind of life experience could I get for $200,000? I was like, oh, well, I could probably get an around the world trip, meet a ton of people, work on writing and website design and all that kind of stuff for, like, half the cost. And it ended up being literally $10,000, literally 5% of the cost of an MBA.
Right.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah. And one thing that I just want to chime in there and add, you know, a lot of people, they think is travel. They think of travel and fun as, like, a waste of money. You know, they have their, like, work versus play mentality. And the truth is, you know, what we all do in leverage, which we're, you know, constantly harping about, is you should be able to leverage them all together. And this is a perfect example where someone would be like, oh, I can't go on a trip around the world because that's just for fun, and I'm not going to meet anyone, and I'm just going to be jerking off. I should go to business school. So my argument would be, if your social skills suck and you're just going to business school because that's the thing to do after you graduate and you don't know what else to do, then you're probably not going to make a whole lot of worthwhile connections, because just because you have that business school in common, if people don't like you, well, they still don't like you and you still don't make any friends. And it's also a lot easier to connect with people when you're doing something fun. Like, if you're traveling around New Zealand and you meet another American, especially someone from the East Coast, you have that instant bond because it's rare. And odds are...
So, actually, on my third day in New Zealand, I met someone that I had gone to college with, that I played, like, pickup basketball with. And we ended up running around Wellington, which is on the south part of the North Island, for 2 days, like, just boozing it up. Because that place is, it's called Wellywood. It's, like, the Hollywood of New Zealand. It's where all the studios are. So there's, like, there's a lot of attractive people and, like, a lot of... It's, like, the model-y part of New Zealand. So, yeah, the social part is huge. And the world is incredibly small. You find that, like, when you're stuck in, like, an insular situation, like, I live in Boston, which is incredibly insular and very guarded society. Like, most people are not friendly to outsiders in Boston. You really have to earn your way into the, you know, the world here. But you step into Thailand and you see one other white person anywhere. You don't even have to have any social skills at all. Just the fact that, like, you are another white person when there are no other white people around is enough to strike up a conversation.
Yeah, totally. And I think for, you know, the guy who I just described, the guy straight out of, you know, undergrad, obviously not you, but the guy straight out of undergrad who doesn't have a lot of, you know, shit going for him other than the fact that he can get into a business school and he's a smart guy, but maybe, like, socially he doesn't have a lot going. Obviously he doesn't know what he's doing financially for his career. You're going to make a lot better connections that will serve you, you know, for your lifetime doing fun shit and meeting people that way then through just like, you know, going to networking events or going to a business school or trying to force these connections that just won't happen.
So I have one comment for Patrick here, because he's going on the on some like startup cruise ship setup, which goes around or goes to another part of the world for a while. Patrick, it's 14 days, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so I love this because it's a step in the right direction. My only comment about it that I wanted to say to you that might make it a richer experience is step out like on your own with no structure after that. So, you know, take the cruise to go to those countries and, you know, be on that ship for 14 days with the other people who are like you, like-minded and whatnot, but go about it afterwards or a second time without any structure at all. And you'll be amazed at what unfolds basically. So one of my favorite stories from traveling was Singapore. I was in Bali on December 29th. So two or three nights before New Year's Eve. And I was sick of the beach. I'd only been there for 11 days, but I get stir crazy. So I was like, I need to get back into city life, or I need to get back in some momentum. So I flew on some random flight that I bought literally 6 hours before getting to the airport. And I was sitting next to these German guys who are basically my counterpart, you know, 25 years old, working for Lufthansa, like educated, like whatever. We just had a lot in common. It was just funny to meet like the German version of me to some extent. And they had a 5-person apartment, and it was the holidays and everyone was gone because it's a transient city. So I talked to them the whole flight, which is 2 hours long. And at the end I was like, yeah, I'm probably just going to sleep in the airport. And they're like, no, come crash with us. And I did. And there was another, let's see, there were two German guys, two Austrian girls who were using the apartment for the break. One of them I ended up hooking up with, which was great, because they were like staying right there. And the, and then there was one guy who was a Swedish guy who happened to go to college or happened to grow up with the girl that I went to college with. So it was like automatically a connection. I stayed with them for a week in this apartment, literally just met them on the plane. And one of the guy's girlfriends was the event manager for Marina Bay Sands, which is the famous hotel in Singapore. It's the one with three buildings that are connected on the top by a giant infinity pool. And we were up there for New Year's Eve, like partying. So it's one of my favorite examples of like, just jump in and like, don't have any plan, but just keep your eyes open and keep your ears open. Because I literally just bought a plane ticket. I didn't know a single person in Singapore, and I hadn't read anything about it and didn't know where to go. And 2 days later, I'm at like one of the hottest parties in the world, like the Marina Bay Sands New Year's Eve party. So it was like, Patrick, I just want you to like jump in and take that structure that you have with that boat, but also do it no structure.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just using it as a kind of a way to create a connection with some people on the way and kind of get me warmed up. And then once I get there, I'm not making a plan. We'll see what I do once I get there.
Perfect.
So give us some more stories. So then after Singapore, and, you know, give us a more overview of the trip, some crazy shit you got into, some notable people you met.
So, let's go through some of the stories I met with, some of the girls that I met there. I mean, I got really lucky, but I think I have like a luck follows hustle mentality where, you know, I do make strategic decisions. I think if like Robbie was kind of watching over the couple of the things that I made, like I didn't end up, you know, on a beach in Lombok, which is the island next to Bali, with like 5 Swedish girls and just myself, like just by accident. Like I first started in Bali, and then I met this Danish guy who was like, hey, we're all going to the Gili Islands, which are these three little teardrop islands in the north of Bali. And they're like, yeah, we're all going to go there and like take mushrooms and like, you know, whatever. And I didn't want to like take any mushrooms, but like, I was like, yeah, I mean, these guys seem cool. So I went along. And then I met these girls who were like, yeah, we want to go to Lombok. And instead of being like, no, I can't, like, I have other plans. I didn't have any other plans. So I just jumped on with them, and we took literally like a horse and buggy to the south side of this island. And it was like just the 5 of us down there, 4, the 6 of us down there. And I went like surfing every day for like 5 days. And we ended up going to this like local wedding, which was super weird. And I mean, I ended up hooking up with one of them for a little while. But the fun thing about this bouncing around was like, you get such a chance to just hang out with people with no timeline, and you can just literally let anything happen. So when I was in Australia, another thing happened where I was just sitting in this diner, and I was the only one in there. And then this Austrian girl comes in, sits down, blonde girl, like super cute. Like I think she was like 20 years old or something. And this bird flies into the restaurant, and she's sitting like a few tables away from me, and we're the only people in there. So we watch the bird, and no one's paying it. Like none of the staff is paying attention. So I don't remember what I said, but it's just something like I had to say something, right? Cause I was sitting there and there's a cute blonde girl. I was like, I can't just let the situation pass. So I said something like, oh, you know, it's your responsibility. Like you should go take care of this. And she like giggled or whatever. And we ended up hanging out, and she had just landed and had not found like the hostel she was staying at. So we found a hostel, and we like played pool in the hostel for a while. We went out to drinks, and like, you know, we ended up hooking up that night. Like literally just, I just was like floating around in this city near the hostel areas, and you just end up meeting people. And I think that's like, again, like being flexible, keeping your eyes open. Let's see. First off, hostel girls are crazy.
What's that?
Because the hostel girls are always just looking for like experiences. Like they're typically like German or Austrian or like whatever. When you go over into Southeast Asia, and you know, they're all like blonde, cute, and like whatever, like they're kind of like the LA girls, right? They're all like 20 to 23 and blonde and cute, right? So, and they're all there to have a life experience.
Exactly.
Oh, and by the way, in the hostels, you always end up like, it's a big like joke, but you always end up sleeping in these like 8-person rooms, and like without a doubt, like someone is having sex in your room like every night. It's really ridiculous. It's really like no rules kind of world.
Yeah, and the other thing that's great about traveling in that part of the world too, you know, Southeast Asia, which I've never been. But if you see a young, hot white girl, odds are she's probably single. She's probably there to travel, and she's there to bang you, right? Whereas if you're traveling, you know, in some of the places that we've been traveling to recently, like Brazil, Eastern Europe, you still have that really cheap, you know, everything's cheap, everything's a good deal. But, you know, it's just filled with locals. And you don't know, you know, the hot blonde girl, the local Ukrainian girl, you don't know if she's any different than the Spanish tourist, right?
Right.
Just from looking at her. So you may not have as many opportunities, but more, you might have more higher quality opportunities, which is something I hadn't considered until you just said that. Up until this point, I was like, Southeast Europe, you know, or Southeast Asia, I think that'd be cool. Definitely some good things to see, but like, I was never really driven to those places based on, you know, the locals that were there. Like I'm not.
Well, I did have one experience with the Thai girl that was very interesting because, I mean, I didn't have any like problem meeting any of these girls at these hostels, because every hostel, like the de facto start was like you get to your hostel earlier, like 2 o'clock or whatever, and everyone's kind of just hanging around in like the downtime, and you get to know people there, you get to know like the girls or whatever, and you're just kind of bullshitting around, and then a couple hours go by and you're like, hey, do you want to get dinner? Because you're all kind of either there alone or floating, and then once you go to dinner, you're like, you ask the hostel, and if you can take charge in this and you're the one, you ask the hostel leaders or whatever, you're like, where would be the best place to go to get drinks in this area? And then all of a sudden you're like leading the charge, you're leading the night, and a lot of people will end up following you. And it's very easy. Like in Boston, you approach people, or like you go up to people, or like you try to create something. They're like, I don't know you, or I don't know that place. Like, all that bullshit that's very hard to get through. And I think that's a lot of the value of like the lines that you learn and like a lot of the jokes that you learn and just the comedy in leverage that'll help you crack through that. But it's just not necessary when you're in like that hostile world.
Max, what you just described is kind of like you're going through the entire dating protocol within one night, which is accelerates the entire process.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're specifically picking up on a situation that like is designed to work, right? You're not fighting an uphill battle. Like I have a friend who's not part of Leverage, but just a friend. He knows that like I'm part of this group, and he asks me like texting advice all the time. And he's always picking girls that like are just starting a relationship or like unavailable. I'm like, why would you put yourself in a situation that's so difficult? Like put yourself in this like situation where the girls are already looking for someone like you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so the Thai girl that I met. So she just, she asked me to be friends on Facebook, and I was like, oh, that's cool. She sold me a ticket to get on the train from Bangkok to Koh Binyang or whatever, like to, cause I wanted to go to the full moon party, which was totally overrated because yeah, basically if you know about something in America that's going on in Thailand, it's like totally overblown. You want to go to like the secret private things that you can only know about when you're there. But needless, like I wanted to go. It was like 30,000 people on the beach, all Australians. It was fun, but it was a mess. So she sold me this ticket and she friended me on Facebook. And then that night she sent me a message. She was like, hey, you know, do you want to get a drink, a beer or whatever? And I was like, absolutely. You know, where would you like to meet? And she was, I couldn't tell, like, this is bad of me. I feel kind of bad, but I couldn't tell if she was like trying to be a hooker or something or like, you know, I'm a white guy, and she could be like, oh, you have money, you're a tourist. Like, you know, I don't know. I just went there. That was in my head, which is terrible, but she was not at all. So she wouldn't let me pay for anything, which was ridiculous because I think I made like, even with the $30,000 that I had with me for this trip, I think I had like 100 times her net worth, you know, and it's, but they're very specific on like, you can't, they don't want you to buy anything if they're actually interested because they don't want to. It's so much like sex tourism there, which is like really creepy and kind of gross. Like, cause it's usually like old Frenchmen or whatever. So she wouldn't let me buy anything. And then I ended up like going back to her apartment, which was again, like just an experience in itself. Cause it was, this is like, she was like 25. She was my age, but she was living in this tiny apartment in Thailand. I'm sure her apartment cost like $100 a month or something. And I felt bad. Oh, I didn't feel that bad. I mean, she kind of knew. I was like, tourist, like passing through, so it couldn't have been that bad. But like, she was kind of pissed at me that I just disappeared afterwards. But you know, we ended up hooking up in her apartment, and it was just like, it was weird to get that cultural experience where I thought about this a lot since then. When you guys went to Brazil, where you're in a position of power as this American guy who comes from the most powerful country in the world, and you're going to basically a third world country where you could be a big source of power to them. Like, you, I don't want to abuse that power, but you are, and you do come from a very strong point of view if you're going to meet someone.
Max, I have a question about that.
Go ahead.
So I'm obviously going to be much older than a lot of these people that are traveling these places.
How old are you, Patrick?
I'll be 31 by the time I actually leave.
Okay.
So is that going to put me in a awkward position? I probably shouldn't be staying at like the hostels with the 23-year-olds as much. But I don't know if that puts me at an advantage or a disadvantage.
I think you got to have an honest story. So my story was like, I was going on a, my story throughout the whole thing was consistent. It was, I was on a, like a journalism like experience. Like I was writing a blog. It was called neverinamerica.com. Still up right now. You can go to Never in America, which is stands for all the stories of things that couldn't happen if you stayed in the United States. You have to get out of the United States to experience these things. So everyone I met, I told them, I was like, hey, I just am taking some time off to write. And I met people who were in their 30s. I met some people who were like actually in their early 40s. And I think it's just the mindset and the story that you bring. If it's not clear why you're there and you don't have like anything to really contribute on like your path and people don't understand why you're there, then I think it does get a little difficult. So I wouldn't say that you're there for like a programming, like work and travel experience. I would say like you are there primarily to like experience the world. Right. So you can say like, I'm on a break for 6 months or, you know, just have a consistent story.
Right. Okay.
Basically, you don't want them to think like, oh, I'm just here to hook up with like hostel girls, you know?
Fair enough.
Great. So let's see. So my countries were New Zealand, Australia, Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, Hong Kong, Macau. I, again, being very, very flexible, which is like a number one point for leverage, is I was in the airport in Hong Kong. I was supposed to fly to India, but I screwed up the visa. So I messaged the person who was actually, this was a flight attendant that I met in Thailand. She was from Finland, and she, because she could fly anywhere for free, she was about to get on a plane to get to India. I messaged her like frantically. I was like, don't go to India. I can't go. And I was like, come to South Africa with me. So she switched her ticket at the last moment. I switched my ticket to South Africa. And like 30 hours later or so, we met in South Africa. And that's just like being super flexible. I didn't leave the airport. I just changed my ticket. And then I continued the trip in South Africa, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. And that was the end. That was the 13 countries.
And I can't, just to reiterate, I can't stress the importance enough of being flexible and not trying to micromanage trips abroad. You know, I just got back from South America and I was traveling around with Carly, and we, you know, just when you're dealing with, you know, even in the US, obviously flights are late, flights get canceled, but when you're dealing with foreign countries, especially third world countries with, you know, poor systems and infrastructure, shit gets canceled all the time. Like the plans that you lay out will get fucked up. And if you're not open to that happening and opening to make other moves, like we sat in the airport all day and we redirected instead of going to Machu Picchu, we ended up going to La Paz. And we had the best time out of anywhere we went during the entire trip in South America in La Paz, which is a place where we weren't even really planning on going. So be flexible, be open to shit. And, you know, you just kind of have to almost believe in, like, you know, for lack of a better term or whatever spiritual or religion you are, you just kind of have to believe in like a higher consciousness. Like, you know, well, maybe I wasn't supposed to go to India. Maybe I was supposed to go to fucking, you know, Africa, and you can have a great time. But if you get hung up on, oh, I was supposed to go there and I had these plans and this, that, and the other, then your trip's going to suck. And there's no one to blame but yourself for being an inflexible fuckstick. So
it's so true. For Robbie saying that, because that point in time, I went to college with this wealthy Indian guy who was, you know, from a family in Bombay, and I hit him up and he was going to take me all around. Like, you know, this would be like the total ticket to visiting India. And, you know, then when it didn't work out, I was like, oh man, I'm so screwed. But Cape Town ended up being one of the most beautiful places I'd ever been. And I ended up staying there for 6 weeks. It was the only place that I really liked. I arrived and I was like, I have to set anchor here. And I met these people and we did like a 10-day road trip, like down to Port Elizabeth and back, which is just like a road trip along the southern coast of South Africa. And, you know, if I had like dug my heels in and spent the week that it would have taken in Hong Kong and lost the time and the momentum to get that visa right, just so I could like continue with the plan and go to India, then I would have missed out on that whole thing. And, you know, that's kind of like the systems approach versus the goals approach, which is one of the things I wanted to talk about here. If you're looking at like a goal and my goal is to get to India, then like you lose when you hit that roadblock and you realize, oh, I can't go to India, or like this whole thing is going to get stopped in its tracks. But that wasn't my goal. My goal was to take the system approach, which is like, I want to travel, have a good time, write about interesting stories, and meet people. So if I just followed the system, I don't give a shit if I didn't go to India. Like, I could go anywhere to accomplish that goal.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, this should even happen to us last year on the Euro trip. You know, it was Patrick, David, Cameron, and Sherban all coming on the trip. And, you know, we didn't realize at the last minute that David needed a visa to get into Ukraine because he's an Australian citizen. All of us being Americans, we didn't, and I didn't have Budapest on the list because I'd gone there before. I didn't really want to go back per se, but Budapest is a sure thing as far as, you know, our goal of the trip was obviously dating related, pickup related, social skills, partying, raging. And I have a network in Budapest and girls, and I know exactly where to go. So at first, you know, I was like, oh fuck, David's going to be upset that, you know, he didn't get to come to Ukraine. But actually, you know, I think everyone ended up having a better time. Patrick and Cameron and Sherban missed out because he decided to go to Croatia and do some wifey time. So I extended the trip for an extra fucking week for free because David couldn't go. And obviously, and ended up more than a week because David, you know, we were only in Ukraine for 5 days. So even from a standpoint, those guys, and it was cool because everyone was super flexible, and I think they got more value out of it than they would have. I certainly, you know, I certainly did. But, you know, you can't let a little thing like a visa stop you or a missed flight or something that seems like a big deal, right? Like, oh, I paid all this money to come on this trip and now I can't even go in the first part. It's like you can make up for it always. So I was and the time we had in Budapest was, in my opinion, way, way, way more valuable than the time we had in any of the other places. We weren't even supposed to go there.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how that all can just come about. But I think, like Robbie, you know this because you've been doing this show long, and it comes naturally to you. But the having that sense of purpose and that sense of confidence, like if Robbie turned to everyone at these times and was just like, "I don't know, guys, what do you want to do?" without stating, "Oh, hey, we're just gonna go here," or like, "Fuck it, we're just gonna go here," which is not actually that big of a decision. But just the confidence in doing that, like, it allows all you guys to follow him and just have a good time, and it makes everything easy. But it's not just for guys, like, girls respond to this enormously. So when you're going anywhere, you're traveling, you meet these people, like, if you say confidently, like, "This is the best place, this is the thing we should do right now, and this is my plan," and obviously be flexible if someone wants to change, but your confidence and your purpose, like, people are going to latch onto that, and people are going to like that.
Totally.
And then for Patrick, just because you're going on this trip, there's one quote that I remember that I really liked about this, which was, if you want something you've never had, which, thinking about this now, like, you're doing this because you want to get a step ahead, you want to learn something about the world, you want to gain life experience. So if you want something you've never had, you have to do something you've never done. So in this case, like, you're going in a total new direction. You're doing the right thing by, like, getting out there. And the hope is, and the plan is, that you will come out of that with something that you didn't have before.
I like that quote. Thank you.
Yeah. So the re-entry was very interesting for me. So getting out of the travel world and the travel zone, which I was getting a little stir crazy. Like, I had finally gotten to that point where I was like, okay, I need structure. I can't just, like, figure out where I'm going to sleep every night. I can't, like, I had rented an apartment for a month or whatever, but I was still going around, like, in hostels after that. And I was like, these are too easy of problems to keep having to solve them every day, like, day in and day out. So, like Carrie Wan posted the other day about, like, picking your clothes and, like, not having to go through that every day, and, like, how Steve Jobs just wore the same thing every day and Mark Zuckerberg does, just to play your life. Like, I didn't want to figure out how, like, where I was supposed to live anymore every day, and, like, what coffee shop I could get Wi-Fi at every day. So I was like, it's time to stop and go do something. So I'd start going out through my network, and Jesse and Robbie were huge in this, which is basically, like, I love offering up my work for free. So, like, if you can go and you can do anything at the beginning just for free and prove your value, then it's very easy to ask for a project where you can make money. And so I went to work for one of Jesse's companies that he invested in. You know, I did some work for Robbie. I did work for a guy who Jesse introduced me to, who was starting a hedge fund. I started doing a lot of math work for him, Excel jockey work. And, you know, he was paying me $100 an hour for that. And, you know, but everything I did at the beginning was always for free. And, you know, I was very strong, like, on my insistence that I had to prove some kind of value before I asked for any kind of money. Because that's what just seemed natural to me, I guess. I got lucky in that sense, but that's always worked for me. And I ended up getting four job offers that way. And some of them were north of six figures. So what ended up happening is I dual tracked all of them at the same time up through, like, May. And then finally at the end of May, 2013, I picked one, which was Osbon Capital. And I picked it because it's a family business. My partner is my father, and we run, So that's obviously a multi-generational business where I can get 100% of equity, and all the other businesses that I, job offers that I had were like 5% equity vesting or like 20% equity vesting. And I just, it's very obvious that if you want to grow your equity, you want to grow your wealth, go for all the equity. And that ended up being the right thing. But the thing with this job that I'm in now, and this is what, this is my like fourth point. This is the one I really want to hammer on. My challenge right now, my biggest challenge is just patience and like a daily pursuit of perfection, because I'm doing a job that has a very low barrier to entry, but a very high barrier to success. So I need to be like extreme on my execution every day. Like I have to get up like it's going to church every morning, and like get to the office very early and read all the newspapers every day, and like, and do all the different things that need to be done to increase my probability for success, because there's no part of this business that's going to be handed down to me. I have to generate it all. And it's a relationship business. So I have to create my own relationship. So, when you're going through the next step or what your business is, I found that, you have, if you want to get the highest return, you really have to put yourself in a position to take full responsibility for the business. You know, you don't want to be an employee of someone else, you know, unless that's what you want, and that's what you want, something that's not so risky. But, you know, I'm a risk taker kind of guy. I mean, I left and I traveled just on a whim because I knew that that would hopefully get me to a higher place. And it did. And I just trusted in that system. And that's what I'm doing right now. Like, I've done very well in Boston so far, but I have high hopes that I'm going to increase the business this year by at least 30-40%. And I want to break 100 million on the amount of that I'm managing. And, I'm right on track in that. I mean, we're coming to the end of Q1, and, you know, I've gotten about 15% growth so far this year, but it's like very, very diligent execution. And Jesse and I have talked about that over and over and over again about like, execution is the only thing. And he talks about this at the startup world all the time. People say like, oh, I had this idea. Like, no one cares about your idea. It's like, someone needs to execute on it.
Totally. The quote is, if ideas were worth anything, you could go to the store and buy them. But there's no idea store. So they're worth.
Yeah, they're worth nothing.